So I'm trying to speak loudly and slowly through this mask, but I am going to use the mask because we, as we sent out word, did have a bit of an exposure to someone who has COVID, so we're just going to be as safe as possible here. I want to talk. The whole of the prologue of John is just packed with stuff, and I was going to have a sermon for about an hour and a half about unpacking the prologue, but I'm not going to do that. But there's all this great stuff, right? In the beginning was the Word. This is a hearkening back to Genesis from the very beginning. Luke has a story of Jesus back at before he was born, with the angel coming to Mary and all of that. John just goes all the way back to the beginning of all things and says that is exactly where Jesus was in the beginning. And he was the Word. That is, the Greek word is logos, from which we get logic. It says if Jesus is the logic of the universe. You know, we think we know how the world goes, and we have some ideas about that, right? No, the reality is this. Jesus is the way the world was created to be. Look at him and see what God has been from the beginning, what God intended from the beginning. And you will get things like light and life and word and truth and grace upon grace. All of those words show up everywhere else in the Gospel of John. You can track it through. And if you ever get to a text where you don't really understand what John's talking about, think, I got to go back to the prologue and see what he said back then. But there's one word that doesn't show up anywhere else in the Gospel of John except in the prologue. And that's the word grace. From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. And I thought, what a fascinating thing. This thing, especially for Lutherans, like, grace is it, right? So why is it that John doesn't use that word anywhere else except at the very beginning? And the answer, I think, is this. Once John has said that word, grace upon grace, the rest of the gospel is a way of showing us what he means by it. And so we just go through the Gospel of John and think about the ways in which God, Jesus embodies the grace of God. Right? From the very beginning, the wedding feast at Cana, where Jesus embodies the idea that our relationship with God is actually, is heaven and earth are married. God and humanity are married, bride and groom. And everything is this joyous celebration of that. That is Jesus graciously showing us what God intended from the very beginning. That we are the beloved of God. End of story. Beloved of God, not for anything that we've done, but because God has chosen us. God created us to be God's beloved. And Jesus shows forth, bringing wine, that is to say joy, back to that original relationship. Not only for the bride and groom there at Cana, but for all of us. They have no wine, Mary says. Jesus balks, is that my time yet? Mary says, just do whatever he says. He's a good boy, to the stewards, and they do. And out of this water comes this the best of wine. That is Jesus showing forth the grace of God. Who we were intended to be and who we are. Then there's this great story with Nicodemus. Remember Nicodemus? He comes to Jesus at night. He's a Pharisee, and he and Jesus get into this conversation. And most of the time when we look at these conversations, we think, oh, Jesus really gives them what's for again, right? And here we are again. Nicodemus is talking about, he's saying, Jesus says, you must be born, what does he say? From above or again? It means both things. The word he uses, So, and Nicodemus is all confused. How can we get into our mother's womb and be born again, right? And he looks sort of silly and buffoonish, really. And we tend to think of it as Jesus really gives him what's for in this argument. But really what's happening here is that Jesus is graciously entering into a great tradition, a rabbinic tradition of back and forth and of subtlety of argument. And it is this beautiful thing that he and Nicodemus are actually, they're two rabbis who are hashing some things out, which is exactly the tradition. That's what the rabbis do. And Jesus is right in that tradition. And he brings, and so he graciously enters into that and blesses that. And Nicodemus, after this conversation, the next time we see him is when the council is getting angry with Jesus, the council of Jerusalem, they're getting angry with Jesus, and they want to do something bad to him. And Nicodemus says, you know, our law says that we shouldn't actually do something to anybody until they've had a trial. Don't you think we ought to at least see what he's up to? He advocates for Jesus. And even further in the gospel, the next time we see Nicodemus, you know where he's at? He's at the cross with Joseph of Arimathea. He and Joseph go and take the body down from the cross, and Nicodemus brings spices to prepare the body for burial. This Nicodemus is someone who follows Jesus and is there at the end. It's almost like he's a catechumen in the Gospel of John. What beautiful grace to see the beginning conversation and then another advocacy, and then him doing a really beautiful, loving thing for Jesus. Grace upon grace, these stories tell. And then there's the story of the woman at the well. Crazy story, because here Jesus is actually entering into a rabbinic conversation with a woman who is from Samaria and a woman. That doesn't happen. Neither of those happen. And yet there's Jesus. And he enters into this conversation, into this relationship with this woman who has had five wives, husbands, and the sixth is not her husband, and all of that stuff going on. And she's one for whom Jesus ought not to whom Jesus ought not to be speaking in public. And yet he does. And not only does he do that, but he reveals himself to her as the Messiah. She's the first one who hears that from him. Can you imagine? This is John's version of the angel going to the shepherds in Luke's gospel. It's, what kind of witness is she? And yet she becomes this great evangelist. Come and see this man who told me everything I've ever done. This incredible grace that Jesus is embodying. To people that we would rather not ourselves interact with. This is a woman who goes to the well at noon. Nobody goes to the well at noon. Unless you don't want to be with other people or are not allowed to be with other people. And yet that's the one to whom Jesus reveals himself. Grace upon grace. A whole new logic of how the world is. An old, old logic revealed again. The man who was born blind. Jesus heals him. But first there's this conversation. The disciples say, who sinned, this man or his parents, that this man was born blind? This, I think, is really important for us today. Because the disciples, like us, we want to put some blame on somebody for all the disastrous stuff that's been going on. We really do. Can we just get our finger on who's to blame, please? And Jesus says, no. This sickness, this blindness, is not connected to sin. This disease is not related to sin. This is not God's punishment for anything this guy has done or his parents. That is not how God works. This is not who God is. I know, there's all of this talk about in the Hebrew Bible about all of these things that come upon people because they aren't faithful to God, all of that stuff. And Jesus is saying, that's not how God is. It is never how God has been. This is so that the glory of God may be revealed. The grace of God. And he heals the blind man. Death itself is not. God does not give us death to punish us. I think the best example has to be this gathering that took place on Thursday night with Bob Gilbertson, who's dying. And you think, who sinned that death has to be this ugly, this difficult? But Bob said something different. He demonstrated something else, the very grace of God. In his dying bed, he's saying, oh, Pastor, there's so many people I need to thank. So many people I need to thank for my life. Of course, God. But so many others. But I guess I won't be able to. And I said, don't worry. I get to do that for you. I can do that for you. That, I think, is what the opportunity that God gives us when we're dying, as we're living and as we are dying, to give thanks for the fullness of God, for the fullness of grace upon grace in our lives. That's what we are called to in John's gospel. Keep looking at all the places where God is showering forth grace upon people. Look at the places where God is showering grace upon you and upon me. That, I think, is what the power of God's word is. God's logic is that God is always coming for us in desire and love and grace and truth and showering us with, filling us with it, so that we may be children of God, children of grace, children of grace in a world that's dying for grace. And so, I love this prologue. And I love that really John doesn't say grace anywhere else except at the beginning, and then says, look and see, watch what Jesus does. That's what grace is.